Hello, this is Debbie back again with the Decatur Herald and Review e-edition reading from the screen here on Wednesday, February 17th, 2016. This month is just a trotting along. First article on the front page, Education Community shows support for Taylor to Board. This is by Valerie Wells, one of the staff writers for the Herald and Review. A school board work session Tuesday night that was supposed to be about proposed budget cuts became a show of support for Superintendent Lisa Taylor. As one speaker said, the auditorium at MacArthur High School was a sea of yellow as supporters were encouraged to wear the color as a visible sign. Last week, word got out that four members of the board, a majority, had agreed that Taylor's contract would not be extended past its June 2017 expiration, while the other three wanted to extend it. The three who supported her, Brian Hodges, Dan Oakes, and Fred Spanius, all wore yellow on Tuesday. The other four board members are President Sherry Perkins, Alita Graham, B.A. Butts, and T.J. Jackson. Larry Altenbomer of Grow Decatur said the community cannot exceed unless public education does. Our mutual objective should be to move forward, he said. Look at the attendance here tonight. When was the last time you saw this much support for a superintendent? Decatur Education Association President Suzanne Krepps also noted the large crowd, which almost filled the auditorium. She said, teachers know their voice can be heard if they speak to Lisa, even if we disagree. Several speakers mentioned that change takes time to take root, yet in the not quite 2 years Taylor's been on the job, the climate and the spirit of the district has become one of positive collaboration. There wasn't pride in our schools, teacher Martha Henderson said of the years before Taylor was hired. It's little things like opening your email and saying, have a great Christmas vacation. It's pleasant to come to work again. It's fun. The board has an important job to look toward the future. We trusted you and felt you had ours and the district's best interest in mind. We're going backwards. The teachers are afraid to pick up. Is that what you really want? Paula Busboom, president of the Decatur Federation of Teaching Assistants, said it was difficult for district staff to understand how the board could justify giving Taylor less than 2 years to prove herself or justify making a decision against extending her contract when they themselves had said she'd met all the goals they'd set. The sharpest words of the evening came from Beth Nolan, a parent and active community participant who has been involved in several education initiatives. She said the community wants Taylor to stay for several more years and that she has created a culture of student-centered learning, revived ties with Richland Community College that had gone dormant, and fought for students in spite of budget constraints. If all this good is taking place and the community thinks she's doing a good job, then why don't you, Nolan said, drawing applause from the audience. Step out from behind those closed doors and walk away from your personal agendas. The decision and vote, if there was one, a point of contention, had to have taken place during a closed session because it did not happen during an open session as the Open Meetings Act requires. The board typically does not respond to public comments during board meetings, though they may ask for contract information and respond privately or through administrators when a community member seeks information or assistance. Quote, the community voted for you for change, and Lisa's made that change, said Gwen Burrows, a teacher who said she's also a taxpayer and a voter. Quote, it's been stated that superintendent works for you. That's not true. She works for all of us. You do work for us, the voters. We want answers. Stop playing with people's lives. We will not tolerate backroom deals being made to further one or all of your personal agendas. And that's the end of that article. Next article, government and politics. Also the governor. Rauner says budget is fight for state's future. This is by Dan Petrella, the Springfield bureau chief for the Herald and Review. Springfield. On the eve of his second budget address, Republican Governor Bruce Rauner told a statewide agricultural group that his standoff with the Democratic-controlled General Assembly over this year's budget, now in its eighth month, is not really about the budget. It's about the future direction of Illinois, Rauner said at Tuesday at the annual meeting of the Illinois Pork Producers Association in Springfield. That's what this is about. Are we going to stay on the track we've been on, or are we going to go in a new direction? Rauner will press his case for the new direction today in his address to lawmakers. Based on his public comments in recent weeks, it appears Rauner will continue to promote aspects of his policy agenda. In speeches to business groups last week, the governor continued his call for reforms such as changes to the way legislative districts are drawn and consolidation of units of local government. Rauner also is expected to push to keep elementary and secondary education funding separate from the budget fight that has bogged down other areas of state funding. According to excerpts of the prepared text of his speech, the governor will announce that his party will be introducing a standalone funding bill for early childhood, elementary, and secondary education. No matter how this session unfolds, send that education bill to my desk, clean, no games, and I'll sign it immediately, the excerpt reads. The governor's office said he'll call for record funding level for elementary and secondary education. Meanwhile, two organizations held news conferences Tuesday at the State House to urge Rauner to change the tack he's taken on budget negotiations. The Grassroots Collaborative, a group of community organizations, labor unions, and others, unveiled what it called the People's Agenda, its alternative to Rauner's pro-business, union-weakening turnaround agenda. Arguing that compared with other states, Illinois spends too little on key areas such as education, health care, public safety, and human services, the group is pushing for revenue increases, including a graduated income tax and a tax on millionaires. Families are hurting all across Illinois, said Amisha Patel, executive director of the Grassroots Collaborative. For over a decade, the state has been divesting from vital public services. The Responsible Budget Coalition also called on Rauner to choose revenue in his budget proposal. Roy Harley, director of Coalition member Prevent Child Abuse Illinois, said the current impasse has resulted in home visits and other services around the state scaling back or shutting down. Without a budget, we're failing the most vulnerable and needy among us, Harley said, calling the situation unconscionable and irresponsible. One of the major crisis points in the budget impasse has been funding for public universities, community colleges, and grants to low-income students. Those areas haven't received any state funding since the fiscal year began July 1st because Rauner vetoed all but the elementary and secondary education portion of this year's budget. The spending plan Democrats passed was at least $4 billion out of balance. Democrats in the General Assembly passed a bill last month without any Republican votes that would devote $721.5 million to funding community colleges and grants through the Monetary Award Program. Rauner vowed to veto the bill because he said there's no money to pay for it, so Democrats waited 2 weeks to send it to him, offering what they called a cooling-off period. Flanked by students, Senator Don Trotter, perhaps it's Donnie, it's D-O-N-N-E, Trotter, Democrat, Chicago, on Tuesday delivered the bill to the governor's office. He's heard from the students. He's heard from the administration how this is hurting the universities, Trotter said before delivering the bill. Hopefully he's given thought to that and will sign the bill. Rauner's office said he still plans to veto the bill. End of that article. Moving on. Decatur City Council okays 5-cent gas tax. This is by Allison Petty, also a staff writer. Residents will pay more at the pump starting April 1st after the Decatur City Council voted Tuesday to create a local motor fuel tax. The tax, which has been a subject of multiple council discussions over the past few years, will be targeted to pay for repairs to the city's aging streets, officials said. The tax is 5 cents per gallon on unleaded gasoline and 1 cent per gallon on diesel fuel. We've got to fix our streets, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said after the meeting. The money's not going to be spent on salt. It's going to be taking people, hopefully local people would be my preference, and having them fix our local streets and improving our community. Each penny is expected to generate $250,000 to $300,000 in revenue. Councilman Bill Faber was the lone no vote. Faber said he wanted city officials to take a more comprehensive look at all taxes and reiterated his request that the council consider a city service fee, a weekly $3 fee paid by everyone who works in the city. City manager Tim Gleason pledged that proceeds would go into a special line item in the budget and the city would track projects funded by the tax on its website. We want to assure the community that this money will not be lost in the general fund or another account of the city budget, he said. The work will begin as soon as this year. Council members added two amendments to the ordinance before voting on it. A sunset provision will cause the tax to expire in 10 years unless a future council votes for an extension. While council members initially had different opinions about the length of time, they ultimately agreed on 10 years. Faber and Councilwoman Lisa Gregory voted against the provision, with Gregory having previously stated that she would not support a sunset. Gregory also offered an amendment approved by all seven council members that limited use of the revenue specifically to construction and maintenance of streets, sidewalk repair and maintenance, curbing, grade separation and approaches, and engineering service related to those items. A number of residents spoke about the gas tax, with most expressing opposition and concern about the number of tax and fee increases that the council has passed in recent years. Resident Charlotte Pickett said Decatur has been taxed to death, referencing recent increases to utility and property taxes. She suggested the tax on diesel fuel would be equal to the amount of charge for unleaded gasoline because heavy trucks create more wear on the roads. Sure, I can pay the tax. You guys can pay the tax. You guys got good jobs, she told the council. But you need to express concerns about other people who live in the city who pay taxes. Two union representatives, Joe Riley of Laborers International Union of North America, Local 159, and Vince Shaw of International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 965, supported the measure, saying road work isn't getting any cheaper. Although I don't reside in Decatur, I do purchase 75 to 80% of my fuel here, said Shaw, who lives in Springfield. I believe I'm a perfect example why you should implement a motor fuel tax that's paid by the users, not just by the residents of Decatur. Gleason said Tuesday that he also plans for the council to hold an assessment of all the city's taxes at the first meeting in August every year. The council did not address the firing of former Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney, but a few people brought up the issue during public comments portion of the meeting. Sweeney filed a lawsuit Tuesday alleging that his February 4th termination was retaliation by Gleason. Janelle Norman, president of the NAACP Decatur branch, praised Sweeney for having built positive relationships with the African American community. His presence at events such as the Martin Luther King Jr. marches and NAACP Jubilee Day spoke to his desire to build trust and goodwill, she said. He wanted to move the community forward with better relations between the African American community and the police department, Norman said. He was well on his way to making his goal become a reality. She encouraged the council to carefully examine Sweeney's termination. End of that article. In a related article, and the next one on the front page, fired police chief sues city to recover his position. This is by Huey Freeman, a staff writer for H&R. Decatur. Former Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney filed a lawsuit Tuesday alleging his firing by city manager Tim Gleason was retaliation for disagreements between them, including Sweeney confronting him for illegally using a police car for personal use. Sweeney, 43, who is represented by attorney John D. Robinson, is asking for a judgment that will reinstate, quote, his seniority status, unquote, as well as back pay, compensation for litigation costs, and other relief, court deems just, unquote, including more than $50,000 in punitive damages. Sweeney has asked for his case to be tried by a jury. The lawsuit names the city of Decatur and Gleason as defendants. The suit, filed in Macon County Circuit Court, alleges his termination was a violation of the Illinois Whistleblower Act because he disclosed violations of state law, rules, and regulations to his employer. In this case, the employer was represented by the city manager. On May 7, 2015, on Gleason's order, an on-duty uniformed Decatur police officer drove Gleason to the St. Louis airport in a city of Decatur squad car, the complaint says. The uniformed officer was taken out of service for at least 5 hours that day. The complaint alleges that Gleason's actions violated, quote, one or more, quote, unquote, laws and regulations, including the Illinois Official Misconduct Statute, a Class 3 felony. About a week later, Sweeney met with Gleason in his office. During that meeting, Sweeney again advised Gleason that his use of a police car and driver for personal purposes was improper and insisted it could never happen again, the complaint alleges. Sweeney's relationship with Gleason was difficult afterwards. Well, thereafter, the complaint said, adding that Gleason apparently resented being warned about his improper personal use of police department resources. The complaint alleges that Sweeney's termination was a violation of the Whistleblower Act because Gleason, acting as city manager, retaliated against Sweeney by terminating his employment because Sweeney disclosed information to Gleason when Sweeney had reasonable cause to believe the information disclosed a violation of state law. The lawsuit also alleges that about 6 days before the February 1st City Council meeting, quote, Gleason told Sweeney he expected him to speak in support of a local motor fuel tax, unquote. Sweeney, quote, immediately refused to make the public statement, unquote. Gleason responded with hostility and he told Sweeney to leave his office. On February 2nd, following the City Council meeting, Sweeney attended a staff meeting with the city's other department heads. When it was Sweeney's turn to speak, he, quote, again stated his opposition to a further tax increase, unquote, and said there were other potential revenue sources. Gleason immediately became furious and ordered Sweeney to leave the staff meeting. Later that day, and again the following day, Gleason threatened Sweeney by asking him, "Do you know who you work for? Do you want to keep your job as a police chief?" Sweeney was terminated on February 4th after declining Gleason's offer to resign. Sweeney obtained his personnel file on February 11th, and there's no documentation of any kind to support Sweeney's termination, the complaint said. Regarding the issue of Gleason using a police vehicle for personal transportation, the complaint said Gleason had recently stated publicly that the then-mayor Mike McElroy, now deceased, gave him permission to use the vehicle to catch a plane for his vacation. Whether or not the claim is true, Gleason is a former Pekin police lieutenant, and as such, he knew or should have known that this personal use of public police property in an on-duty uniformed officer was improper and violation of an Illinois law. The complaint alleges that McElroy never contacted Sweeney regarding this incident and that Gleason never previously claimed to Sweeney that Mayor McElroy approved Gleason's personal use of public resources. Sweeney, a 20-year veteran of the Decatur Police Department, was appointed as police chief effective January 3, 2015 by then city manager Ryan McCready. Gleason, former city manager of the small town of Washington, Illinois, began his stint as city manager March 23rd. Gleason did not return a phone call in reference to this article. End of the article. And, I believe, end of the front page. Starting the local section with the briefs, Decatur, Heart Health Fair, Crossing Healthcare, on Central Avenue is hosting a heart health fair from 9 a.m. to noon on Wednesday, February 24th. Your Heart Matters is a free event that includes a cooking demonstration, heart-healthy trivia, information about heart-healthy food options, tips on staying active, and activities for kids. Forsyth, Windows 10 program. Information about using Windows 10 will be provided during a program at 6 p.m. Tuesday, February 23rd in the Forsyth Public Library on Elwood Street. Blake Rowland from Staples Tech Center in Forsyth will demonstrate the new features of the computer operating system. For more information and to submit questions in advance, call the library. Sullivan, free medical screenings. Cholesterol, blood sugar, and prostate screenings will be offered from 8 to 10 a.m. Thursday, February 25th at the Sullivan Medical Center on Jackson, West Jackson. Cost for the total lipid panel, cholesterol, triglycerides, and blood sugar is $20. PSA, blood screening, is $25. A physician's order is not required. Fasting for 10 hours is necessary for the cholesterol, triglycerides, and blood sugar test. Results will be mailed to your doctor within a week. For an appointment, call 876-4377. 876-4377. Decatur. Lourdes Kindergarten. Our Lady of Lourdes School will have kindergarten screenings Thursday and Friday, March 3rd and 4th. For more information or to schedule a screening, call Principal Chris Uptmore at the school. Mattoon. Lakeland Job Fair. Lakeland College will host a job fair from 10 to 12:30 p.m. Wednesday, February 24th in the Fieldhouse on its campus in Mattoon. The free event is sponsored by Career Services. Students and community members will be able to meet employers, distribute resumes, and find information about job possibilities from area businesses. Continuing on in the local section, education. Mount Zion hires Cheryl Warner as new high school principal. A new principal at the high school is just part of some structural changes being made in the Mount Zion School District. The board voted unanimously Tuesday night to hire Cheryl Warner, who has served as principal at McGehee Elementary School since 2010, as the new high school principal. The hiring comes after the board accepted the resignation of current principal Craig Garber during his January meeting. Garber will leave at the end of the school year. Mike Mose, who previously served as high school's assistant principal and athletic director, will remain in the role of assistant principal but will no longer be athletic director. The hires are part of a structural overhaul of the principal's office that Superintendent Travis Roundcount said became an option with the departure of Garber. While Warner will act as the principal, Moses' duties will focus on disciplinary issues. The district will also have an assistant principal position that focuses solely on athletics, music, and other extracurricular activities. An education liaison position will also be created that will focus on academic issues and provide guidance for students. We've created a structure in the principal's office where the principal can have three assistants that will focus on these three important areas, Roundcount said. We're a growing district and need to make these necessary changes. The other two job openings have been posted, and officials hope they will be filled in the coming months. In other business, the board unanimously approved a bid to purchase a grand piano for $49,715.37 from Effingham-based Piano Network. Of that, roughly $35,000 will be paid for through donations made by outside groups. We have some dedicated people in the community, Roundcount said of the donations. There's no timeline for when the piano would arrive, but officials expect it to arrive before the end of the school year. Next, board well-wishers speak of retiring president's leadership and dedication. This is by Chris Lisvardi from the H&R staff. Decatur, Richland Community College President Gail Saunders is starting to feel the end of her 15-year tenure is quickly becoming a reality. The College Board of Trustees gave Saunders a fond farewell Tuesday with a reception in the Schilling Center, followed by her last regularly scheduled board meeting. She is set to retire at the end of the month. It puts things in perspective, said Saunders, who earlier in the day was recognized for her service by the Illinois House and Senate. It's been an emotional day for us. Saunders replaced Richland President Chuck Novak in 2001 after he'd been there for more than 12 years. Novak, who was announced last week as the board's choice as interim president when Saunders retires, was among those attending the reception, along with dozens of community members, including Millikan University President Patrick White, Richland staff and faculty, and leaders from other community colleges in Illinois. Novak's appointment will be formalized during a special board meeting, which has been scheduled for 6:30 p.m. February 23rd. The Reverend Wayne Dunning, a current board member who was chairman of the Presidential Search Committee in 2001, said he thought replacing Novak would be difficult, but Saunders has proven she was the right choice. Trustee Larry Osborne said Novak set the bar high. I thought we would never replace this guy. We had such high esteem for, Dunning said. Some people quickly go on, but some stay a while and leave footprints. Richland has never been the same in the past 15 years. Richland has become a better place, which with Saunders guiding the way, Board Chairman Bruce Campbell said. Campbell also credited the staff at Richland who helped to implement Saunders' vision for the institution. We've come a long ways, Campbell said. A lot of it's been due to her leadership. Richland is facing a precarious financial situation as Saunders retires. She said it's in a better position than other community colleges through Illinois, but navigating without funding from the state will become more of a challenge. The board is set to approve $3 million in working cash bonds that will be used mainly to pay its expenses from the fall that it was expecting the state to fund, Saunders said. She said the sale of the bonds is a temporary fix, and the college will need to look at other measures the longer the state goes without approving a budget. End of this article. Survivor, participant, tells about support he's seen from both sides. This is by Justin Kahn, Decatur. Delmar Sandage thanked those in attendance at the American Cancer Society's Relay for Life kickoff event for his life. "People like you are the reason I'm here today," said Sandage, who was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in November 2014. The kickoff event, held at Richland Community College's Schilling Community Education Center on Tuesday, was a chance to sign up for the July 15 Relay for Life at Richland. It was also a trivia night and silent auction to raise funds for the event. Sanders first became involved in Relay for Life in 2002 when his mother was diagnosed with cancer. "My sister got a team together and it was something for Mom, so I walked. But it didn't really mean anything to me," Sandage said. "I was just there." The next year, his wife's sister, Lori Hsu, was diagnosed with cancer, and Sandage noticed support Hsu received from those involved with Relay for Life. "I saw this compassion," Sandage said. She began some relationships through Relay for Life from January until she passed away in July. "We would be at her house, and there was constantly someone from Relay for Life sending her notes or letters or stopping by. I started realizing it's not just an event, it's a lifestyle of caring." Sandage participated for the next decade and was proud to see those participating in the Survivor Lap grow each year. Then, in November 2014, Sandage was feeling pain in his abdomen. It was discovered that his pancreas had an 8.5-centimeter tumor, and even worse, the cancer had spread to his lower intestine and was working toward his liver. "The doctor said there's nothing I could do. With chemotherapy, I'd have 9 to 12 months to live, and without it, I'd have 3 to 6, Sandage said. But the chemotherapy worked. A year after his original diagnosis, Sandage has no active cancer in his body. "It was a miracle," Sandage said. "Last year I was here, and my neighbor asked me, 'Delmar, all those years you've been coming out here, did you ever believe you'd be on the other side of it and be benefiting from the research?' I told him, 'No, I wasn't here for that, but I'm thankful for everyone involved.'" Mark Birch was at Tuesday's kickoff event to donate $15,000 raised by the Decatur Youth Hockey Association for the American Cancer Society. Birch's sons played with the Hockey Association when they were kids, and to raise money, Birch and his sons organized an alumni game. Birch said he decided to give the funds raised to the American Cancer Society because both his children's grandmothers died of cancer, and his brother is currently fighting the disease. "Our target was $10,000, but we blew past that," Birch said. "Everybody's going to die, but nobody deserves to die of his cancer. It's a horrible, horrible disease." End of the article on the Relay for Life. You can get more information by going to the Relay for Life, Macon County, or calling Crystal Sewell there, and or you can visit the American Cancer Society site or call them. End of that. This is the end of part one of the Herald and Review for Decatur for Wednesday, February 17th, 2017. This is Debbie saying talk to you again soon with part two.